Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 47 of Nerd Pride Radio. 47. All right. Due to an inside joke that started at Pomona College in California in 1964, the number 47, forwards, backwards, in multiples, in combinations, has appeared in nearly every single episode of every iteration of Star Trek, including all the series and all the spinoffs and movies and everything. Hell, after making the new Star Trek reboot, J.J. Abrams carried the whole tradition of slipping 47 into the episodes. He carried that back to Fringe with him. And so now, if you ask the 47 Society, which you can find on the web at 47.net, the number 47, they'll tell you that 47 is the quintessential, I'm putting this in quotes, you can't see it, the quintessential random number. And while I appreciate the Society's amazing dedication in tracking the number 47 throughout the world, we did already mention in episode 37, science has proven 37 to be the most random number. So sorry, 47, but still, it is really cool. So ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there's like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my noggin anymore. As always, you're listening to the best-smelling podcast on the internet. That's right. Nerd Pride Radio smells like dilithium crystals. Have I used dilithium crystals before? Oh, God, I hope not. I really need to organize my catalog so I can find this stuff. All right. Anyway, there is nothing holding us back right now, so we are going to go straight to the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me where I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. Something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list, and then the best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. All right, so first thing on the master list, crap, Mike was wrong. That's right. It's time for yet another installment in our all-too-frequent segment, Mike was wrong. And this one wasn't even on the podcast. Normally, I save this for apologies and corrections for stuff I've said on the podcast that was stupid, and that's a lot of it. But in this particular case, I was wrong on my kids' homework, and I was wrong so badly that I have to bring it to you. Because my third son, Elijah, he is 10 years old, and he's working on magnetism and forces in science class, and we're working on the worksheet, and he's asking me for some help, and the question is, or no, it was studying for the test. It wasn't even a worksheet. He was studying for the test. And so I ask him off the sheet, I say, what metals react to magnets? And he starts listing them off. He goes, iron, steel. Well, steel is iron. Yeah, we get that. Cobalt. He knew cobalt. Then he lists, I think nickel, because nickel is near and dear to him because he has a nickel allergy. So he's very aware of nickel as a substance. I'm like, no, it's not nickel. He goes, no, it is. It's nickel. I'm like, no, it can't be nickel. I said, half of our money has nickel in it, substantive amounts of nickel in our money. And our money doesn't stick to magnets. So clearly it can't be nickel. He's like, I think it is. I would have swore she said that. But I was adamant. I mean, I'm like belittling him for not knowing that nickel is not magnetic. I mean, seriously stupid. And so we go pull the book out and we look it up. And sure enough, ooh, iron, cobalt, nickel, right there on the damn list. And then some other, obscure element starting with G that I don't remember the name of. I was so horribly, humiliatingly wrong, and he has not let me forget it. It has been 5 days since that night, and he has every single day, no matter what we're discussing, I tell him something, he goes, oh yeah, like nickel's magnetic? Ugh, whatever. All right, so I was wrong and there. Eli, I have fessed up on the podcast. You were right. I was wrong. I'm sorry. All right. Now, enough of that boring crap you guys don't care about, obviously. Let's go to, oh, my gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
Role-playing games, video games, card games, if it fits on my gaming table, then I am here to share it with you. I actually have a couple things tonight. One, playing more Pathfinder and loving it. I can't even tell you. Oh, God, you're right, Kyle. I say that all the time, don't I? I can't believe that. All right. I love playing Pathfinder. I am having so much fun with this game, and we're actually running two different campaigns, so it's almost every Thursday night that we are sitting in on Roll20 and playing something. And the first one is our Rise of the Rune Lords campaign, where I'm playing the teenage ditzy bard, and the other one is The Cost of Magic, where we are tributes offered up, well, tax representatives, but tributes offered up for some sort of clear death sentence, that we're supposed to go recover some magic item, but no one ever returns. So clearly we're not coming back from this. And so we play a bunch of really bizarre, mostly lame characters. We created them all with Method One. I think I told you guys about this before. And so my character in particular is, you know, amazingly stupid, clumsy, weak, blah, blah. I mean, he's got nothing going for him but his wisdom. That's it. All of his other scores are just trash. And the rest of the group, while not as crippled as I am statistically, are all pretty messed up. So it is a comedy of errors sort of game, and we're just having a great time with it. I don't know how much detail I'm going to go into about this as time goes on, but man, it was so much fun. If one of the guys hadn't been made of wood, hell, half of us would be dead already. And then the other one, last night, we played Rune Lords and had one of the best sessions we've had since we started. I mean, GM and eight players. One guy was missing. He apparently has a job or something. But even with eight of us there and the GM playing the ninth guy as an NPC, still went really smoothly. I think everyone had a good time. We had a lot of fun bouncing off of each other, and we got through combat and exploration and discovering new magic items and weird magical effects, and I charmed a goblin, which, you know, made me happy, and it was just a ton of fun. And the only reason I'm bringing it up, other than to tell you I had a ton of fun, is to mention that we had the, as Darks put it over the mic, he said, worst surprise round ever. Oh, I charmed that goblin. We got a bunch of information out of him. He's a big mutant goblin with three arms, big size. And I charmed him, and we tried to get as much information out of him as we could. And then it's time to leave, and we're like, well, we can't just leave him there. So all the heavies in the group, the four biggest warriors, they all decide that, okay, tell you what, let's get around. So we're kind of out of his field of view. And all right, on the count of three, we all just get him all at once. He's not expecting it. He's charmed. He thinks we're his friends. All right, we're good. And so they all gang up, and one, two, three, and then they all go, and quite literally one of them hit with an arrow. I mean, the guy is flat-footed. There's no dex bonus. They've got flanking bonuses on this, and they couldn't hit to save their lives. It was horrifying. And yet, made for one of the most entertaining scenes of the entire night. So I love it. Failing to win. That's exactly that. You fail forward. Whether you do well or do poorly, you're advancing the story and you're having a good time and you're developing character and interesting plot. And we just had a good time. So anyway, enough of Pathfinder. The other thing that I was going to bring up is, I don't even know if I can do this one justice. My oldest son, Jacob, has been, he's got a Steam account. He loves his Steam account. He plays way too many video games. And one of the things that he has discovered through Steam is a game called Gang Beasts. And much like Mecha versus Kaiju that I talked about last week, this is another one that I will bring up that it is a game that needed our help, but I will present it to you just after they've already achieved their funding and they're moving on to whatever it is they need to do. So they don't actually really need our help anymore. I'm just going to be a week too late on everything I bring up. But Gang Beasts is so far it's a fighting game. Who knows what they're ultimately going to turn it into. But yeah, go look at the YouTube videos of Gang Beasts, because the creatures that you're playing, they've got no real skins on them. They're just these shapeless kind of blanks. I mean, but it physically has kind of the feel of moving an ape around the screen, like a gorilla, a chimpanzee, something like that. And apparently with the controls, I mean, it's essentially you've got, you know, your movement, but then you've also got a button for each limb. So when you hit left arm, your left arm, it's like it's a puppet. The left arm just kind of flings forward. And if you hold it out, you can maybe grab onto something or something like that. But what it comes down to is as they're moving around and the arms are just kind of like flopping as they go. And it makes for this comical effect when they start wrestling with each other and they start punching and slapping. I mean, it is like a gorilla slap fight, and it's hysterical to watch and really exciting. And there's all sorts of scenarios. The first one he shows me, he's like, oh, come on, come here. You gotta watch this. And he sets it up and he's just running some, you know, pre-beta version here. And I'm watching these two, primary color monkey looking creatures that are just slapping the crap out of each other on a window washer platform on the side of a skyscraper. I don't know why. No good reason. I have no idea that this is a scene that they're planning on building in, or if it was just interesting to them to check out the physics of it. But right now, it's a fighting game that is basically just a huge physics test. And it's just fascinating. I love this. It's a group of indie developers, like five dudes working together. And so my son's been corresponding with them because, you know, it's just five dudes working on an indie game. So they're more than happy to take suggestions and feedback from all sorts of people. And very cool about it. And anyway, they just got the green light, the official green light from Steam. So their game is actually officially in development. It's going to be produced. And the only thing that makes me nervous about it, if you go watch the videos and you see the interactions, the only thing that makes me nervous is I don't know what I'm going to think about it when they put skins on them. It's one of those games where, you know, you look at the blank versions for so long that, you know, I'm just watching, you know, shapeless monkey blobs fighting each other. And I think that's awesome. But eventually, you know, they're going to dress these guys up as actual gorillas or, I don't know, miniature Godzilla monsters, or it could be anything. The name of the game is Gang Beasts, and that may actually be their official concept, or it may just be a placeholder title for all I know. So, you know, when it gets all done, I have no idea what it's actually going to look like. So part of me is really curious to see it, and then part of me is kind of dreading it because God, what if they dress them up in something dumb and then I'm going to kind of miss these guys. Aw. But anyway, it was just something interesting, so I figured I'd throw it in here. Next up, I have no idea. It is, we'll wait for the music.
Oh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
Science! That's right. That music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. All I have to do is read it off a page. Honest to God. All right, what's the science this week? This is great. This is the Baby Name Wizard blog. And for those of you who actually follow the XKCD blog, or Blag, as Randall likes to call it, you've probably already seen this. But I'm trying to explain to my son about the Baby Name Wizard blog and how cool it is. And he's like, he couldn't get past a Baby Name Wizard blog. Baby Name Wizard, it's a baby name website. Yeah, it's a place where you go and you look up baby names. Yeah. And you like it. Yes, I do. You have to go look because it's so sciencey. I can't stand it. The woman who runs the site, her name is Laura Wattenberg. And Laura Wattenberg is clearly a baby name nerd. She is a baby name geek of the highest order. She loves names. And so she's got stats on her website going back the popularity of every name conceivable for the last 150 years. And so you can plug in, and she's got all these different tools. Some of them you only get if you're a subscriber, and some of them are there for free. I mean, you can look up any name, obviously, and it'll give you some stats on it and the origin and all sorts of cool information about it. But then there's what's the thing called? The baby name Voyager. That's the one I like. Oh, that thing is so cool. The baby name Voyager, you plug in a name, and it gives you the graph of how popular that name has been over the years, and so you can kind of watch, and it'll give you – anyway, it's just cool. And so I look at all four of my son's names, and sure enough, all four of my son's names were either just rising in popularity as we handed them out, or they peaked in popularity just as we were handing the name out, which doesn't necessarily mean that they were the most popular name that year, although Jacob was. But it does mean that that was the peak of that name's popularity when we gave it. But then her blog portion is the really fascinating part, as she actually combines all this information that she's gathered, and she analyzes it and breaks it down and starts giving you, just interesting facts about it. Like, for example, in recent years, she has graphs showing an increase in the number of gun-related names. That really names like Wesson and Ruger. Yeah, they're being given to actual real babies. I wouldn't even have dreamed of that. And yet, apparently, there are. It's a trend, and so she analyzes that and how it speaks to, you know. Not, and she's not commenting on gun culture in particular. She uses it as an overall point of a rise in baby names reflecting personal interests. And she's using gun culture and gun-related names as the first one. But, you know, I mean, obviously, in the past, almost 100 years ago, there was a huge fashion for flowers, rose and lily, stuff like that, or gemstones, pearl and opal and ruby. You know, were popular girls' names way back when. And you get these trends, and she says right now, gun trend is one of them among many. Just fascinating. Or talks about the rise in popularity of certain names based on trigger events. So, for example, the rise of the Beatles. And she's trying to analyze, was there a rise in names like John Paul, George? Well, Ringo's never been a real winner. But, you know, John Paul and George are such traditional names. There was nothing really... It's hard to identify if the Beatles had any effect on those names, especially for a name like John. Well, the Beatles are hitting right around the time that Kennedy is president, and then Kennedy is assassinated, so John and Jack would have been popular because of Kennedy. You know, who knows where. But then she said, don't look at the first names, but look at the last names and follow the trend of Harrison as a first name, Lennon as a first name, even McCartney as a first name. And she said, especially Lennon. She said Lennon spelled as Lennon did actually had a real spike in popularity that is probably as a result of the Beatle himself. Interesting, fascinating. And she's got just article after article after article. I must have gone in because XKCD recommended this blog and recommended a couple, like a half dozen of these articles. So I went in and read all the ones he recommended. And then after that, I started digging through the archives, and I must have gone through 30, 35 articles before I finally had to push myself away from it and go, okay, I'm done. I can't. But now I'm going back and I'm checking like twice a week because I have to. It's just fascinating. Who would have thought that baby names would produce that much fascinating science? But it does. Just goes to show, I mean, you can geek on anything. And this one is just a winner. I absolutely love it. So go to the babynamewizard.com. Laura Wattenberg, her stuff is just fascinating. It's absolutely incredible. And I'm looking at some of the other tools she has that are subscription only. Almost makes me wish I could, you know, just kick in the $15 for the one trimester subscription just to go play with some of those tools for a few days, just because they look like so much fun. I might still do that. It's interesting. But, okay, see, now I have to scroll down. Next one is, what am I doing? Oh, here we go. It's the Nerd Pride Turntable.
Jamboree handouts, two turntables and a microphone. Bottles and cans, just clap your hands, just clap your hands.
That's right. I am just a wannabe music nerd talking about music, and I haven't done the turntable in a long time. But I'm actually going to give you a taste of this one, just a little bit that I'm peeling off of YouTube here. Joel, this is, you know, this is one that almost could have been a fingertips one because I'm not going to go on very long. Joel comes into my office the other day and he says, have you heard baby metal? I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Is that a genre? No, baby metal. They're a group, a Japanese group. Really? All right, I'll check it out. So when I get a chance, I go to YouTube, I look up baby metal, and he had recommended that I listen to their song Gimme Chocolate. And you know what? Let me not describe it. Let me give you a taste of it right now. All right, just listen. See what I'm saying? Do you see that? Maybe that's not your style. Maybe it is. I don't think I could listen to hours of that, but oh, I'm just fascinated. You have to watch them perform because they come out and they're all dressed in red and black and they look like, you know, Japanese pop singer girls who are done up in kind of an anime style and very traditional, very classic looking anime J-pop singers. And then the heavy metal breaks out and the heavy metal goes nuts. And then they start singing J-pop over the top of heavy metal. It's awesome. It's really, really awesome. I was just hypnotized by it. And so the first thing I thought was, oh my God, I have to call Jacob because this is his new favorite thing. And sure enough, that night we send a link to Jacob and he tuned in and he comes back 5 minutes later and goes, oh my God, this is my new favorite thing. Yeah, it is. He's in fact gone out and he listened to all their songs. He purchased a few of them. He was just fascinating. I mean, you know me. I like mashups. I like cover songs. I like, you know, new twists on old things. And I just thought baby metal is fascinating. It's just something new. How bizarre. Okay. I told you that was going to be a quick one. Next one. Oh no. Get the little ones out of the room. Make sure you're sitting down for this.
Nerd rage. Came flashing back, and I just looked at him and went, "Rrr!"
That's right, it's time for some nerd rage. All right, here's my problem. Patent trolls. I cannot stand these guys. I hate the whole process. Some of you know what I'm talking about, and some of you have no clue. I'll explain. But first, the main reason I hate them is because they've made me agree with Adam Carolla about something. I'm just furious about that. I don't know what you think about Adam Carolla, but to me, he's just such a douchebag, frat bro, kind of wannabe. Oh, I don't care for him. He made his name on The Man Show, and he's just never let go of that persona. And I get the feeling from having heard people talk about him that he is a real douchebag, but a lot of it is him being a douchebag because that's what he needs to be. That's the personality he has to have for his podcast to be successful. And by the way, I think he may well be the most successful podcast going out there right now. Maybe. If not, he's up at the very top, which is why he's involved with the patent trolls. Here's the deal with patent trolls. These are guys who, hold on real quick. Oh, Diet Dr. Pepper. Food of the gods. All right. Patent trolls are people who own a patent on something, some technology, some process, and they don't actually use it. They don't actually develop anything with it. All they do is sit on that patent, and then they send out letters to other people who are doing something vaguely similar to that and claiming a patent violation, a patent infringement, and then demanding that those people pay them money, either some settlement fee or some licensing fee or something like that. And it's all just a huge scam. And for the most part, most of the patent trolls work out of or file their suits in East Texas because East Texas jurisdiction just happens to be very conducive to what they're doing. And the reality of this, as Adam Carolla explains it, and I've done some research to verify that, he's not kidding. You get hit by one of these patent trolls, if they decide to pursue you in court, you could very well win against them, but the conventional wisdom is fighting a patent troll in court is going to cost you minimum $1.5 million. Can you see my jaw dropping? Can you see that? $1.5 million? Yeah, most big companies, they get letters from patent trolls. Their lawyers just tell them, look, it's not even worth it. Just pay them. You know, come up with a settlement. Don't give them what they're asking, but come up with something reasonable, make them go away. And that's what they do. And these guys can just make, and these are guys that, you know, these are lawyers, law companies that they're not even the originators of the patent. They may not even necessarily represent the originator of that patent. They're really, honestly, just buying these suckers up. They buy up the patent rights from somebody, and then they sit on them and they wait for their opportunity. And one of the worst parts of it is what they're suing for. So, for example, why is Adam Carolla being sued? And I only hear about Adam Carolla because they're also suing Mark Maron, who I do listen to, and several other big podcasters. Basically, you know, like the top 10, top 20 worth of podcasters out there, the ones that actually have money, are now being targeted by these lawyers. And what they have is a guy who 20 years ago filed a patent for, well, what he's claiming is podcasting. All right? So the idea is he filed a patent for a process to record audio into a digital format and then distribute that digital format over the internet so that other people can listen to it. So what you're saying is your patent is, if I make a file and then share that file over the internet and the file involves sound, I've violated your patent. Yep. Okay, so your patent specifies the technology and the file formats. No, it's just a process patent. A what? A process patent. Right. The guy patented the idea of, if I make a recording and I share it over the internet, it doesn't matter how I made the recording, it doesn't matter how I share it, if I recorded it and then sent it by internet, that was my idea. I thought of it first, therefore, I own that process. And if you want to distribute a podcast, then by God, you need to license that process from me. Well, yeah, but you didn't actually make anything. Well, that's hardly relevant. I own the process. Oh, my God. And now the one for podcasting is, it is slightly more complicated. It is slightly different because the originator of the patent is actually part of the lawsuit. He's actually still holds his original patent. And once upon a day, 20 years ago, he actually did invest like $1 million of his own money trying to make this process work. But, you know, that was in the early stages of the internet, and it didn't do anything. But the fact that he jumped the gun and he wasted a bunch of his money on it does not mean that he can own that process. You know what I mean? I mean, if he had come out with some real technology and that technology was the basis for the stuff that people are doing now, maybe we could talk. But it's not even that. This is similar supermarkets. Supermarkets are getting hit because if you have a store locator feature on your website, so if you have something on your website that says, type in your address and we'll tell you the nearest store to you. It's not any specific technology. Just if you've had that idea of, hey, we can tell you what store is closest to you. That idea is patented. So supermarkets are getting hit by the company or group or person who owns the idea of store locator. All right. Or for another one, what's the one? Someone owns, let me see if I can find it in my notes here. I don't think I have it. But one of them that I read up on, somebody owns the idea of, if you scan a document and then email that document to somebody else, yeah, we own that. Really? I've carried on long enough. You understand how crazy it is. And so the idea is that, you know, they really shouldn't be allowed to do this. Somebody needs to put a stop to this. All right. And so Adam Carolla has a legal fight going, and he's raising a big stink because, oh, they've picked on the wrong guy now. And so he's raising a bunch of money and asking people to donate to his whatever project that he has. And he's asking for legal aid so that he can help fight these off for the betterment of all of us, which, you know, is probably a noble cause. I would love to see someone win against them, especially in the field of podcasting, which is relevant to me. I'm not in any danger because I don't make any money and I only have, you know, you 40 listeners. So really, this is not going to affect me anytime soon. But it's important on principle. So, you know, Adam Kroll is out there doing his thing. But also, the legislature has gotten in on this. There are something like 5 or 6 patent troll-related bills going before Congress, going before the Senate. And that, on the surface, seems like a really good thing. It honestly, I'm excited that they're actually doing something about it, that they're recognizing a problem and they're doing something about it. But then part of it is, like I say, it's all well and noble that they want to do something about it. But as always, you got to look at the source and you got to, nothing is as cut and dried as it seems. I want to do it with patent trolls, clearly. But some of the provisions that they want to use to do that, all right, one of them that I am all in favor of is a customer stay, right, which means, for example, if you're one of the people who's being sued for scanning documents and then emailing them, and you're being sued by someone who claims they own the patent on all that, then look, it's not me who's doing that. Why would you come after me when you should be going after the people who designed the machines to do that? All right, the scanner makers and the email providers and all that. Why would you come after me as the individual customer? Well, because we can scare you. And so a customer stay is the concept that you put a hold on the customer lawsuit, and the customer doesn't have to do anything until the lawsuit with the manufacturers is actually settled. You can't go after individual users while you're still in litigation trying to settle things up with the manufacturer of these products. That's a good idea, all right? Kind of concentrate it all up on the big people who are best able to defend this, potentially. But again, even that, this is all, you know, from an afternoon of research. You know, I don't even know all the details of it. One of the other things that, and this is going to, it looks like it's going to get put through, is the idea that the loser of a lawsuit is the one who has to pay for everyone's legal costs, which, on the surface of it, patent troll comes after me. I know it's going to cost me over $1 million to defend it, but I also know I'm right and I'm willing to go through with it. And if I can somehow come up with that $1 million knowing I'm going to win, then hey, when it's all said and done, you know, maybe I can get a law firm that puts it on hold, you know, payment on hold until they know for sure, you know, who's going to win on it. And then when it gets all said and done, okay, hey, the patent troll lost. Now the patent troll has to pay that $1 million. Oh, that'll certainly deter a bunch of people and it'll certainly stop a lot of patent trolls from doing what they're doing. But you know what else it also means? It also means that no one in the world will ever challenge Google or Microsoft or Apple on any of their patent claims, because you know they have better lawyers than you do. You know they have better money than you do. And the risk that I'm going to try and fight one of them, and then if I lose, I have to pay their $2 million in legal fees? Oh, that's horse crap. Oh my God. So while yes, loser pays seems like a great provision to help stop patent trolls, it's also a great provision to help big business if they want to keep little people from challenging them. So, you know, and that's one that is probably going to get passed. What were the other ones? Patent demand letters, the letters that go out to companies telling them that they owe, that, oh, you're infringing on our rights, you need to pay, blah, blah, blah. Those patent demand letters, when they go out, the law, they're not requiring it yet, but they're saying we should, and it's probably going to get added in. It's basically that, look, if you're going to send out a patent demand letter, you have to actually identify the patent in question, because a lot of them don't. They just say, hey, we hold a patent on this process, but they don't say what the patent is. They don't give the person they're suing the resources to actually look into it. So it would have to specify the actual patent. It would have to specify who holds that patent and who thus benefits from this. It would have to give the details of how you are infringing. It would have to name dollar amounts. It would have to, because, for example, the lawsuit against Adam Carolla, they're asking for $3 million now, but that's only because Carolla is actually taking them to court over it, and so they had to put a dollar value on it. Mark Maron got the same threatening lawsuit letter saying that, hey, pony up or we're going to have to shut you down. And Maron says, okay, you know, his lawyers talk to them and say, well, what are you looking for? And the response they got back was essentially, we don't know how much you got. I mean, it was like that. And they're justifying it in terms of, well, you know, the whole process of licensing is new. And so we're trying to settle on something that is equitable and we have to, but it's basically going to be, well, we don't know how much we're going to take from you until we know how much you could actually give us. So, you know, let's get onto that first. So, you know, legislation that says the patent demand letters have to actually specify stuff like that, that's a good thing. And everyone seems to agree that's a good thing. I don't know why they're taking so long to put it into effect yet. And then, oh, what was the last one? Hold on. I've got it somewhere here. Okay, here it is. This is, again, infuriating because it's all about where the money lies. And one of the best provisions of this would have been a process for review of patents outside of the court system. Like, actually give the patent offices or some related organization the money to actually review patents and see if there's actually any merit to them. To look at them and go, A, does this duplicate a bunch of other stuff that's already out there? And B, is this even something that we should be able to patent? Or is this just stupid? Is this an obvious common sense idea that really these low level patents that people are making money on now, things that on the surface of them are obviously stupid and yet cost millions of dollars to fight? And so the idea is that, oh, well, if we institute this review process, then we could have some organization that maybe for $10,000 for a patent, or even if it's $100,000 for a patent review, that this organization can get through that review, on the cheap, basically, and we can throw out a whole bunch of these low-level crap patents that really nobody should be making money on that. That's ridiculous, right? And so instead of spending millions of dollars on legislation to determine its validity, we just spend a few thousand and get it done with. And you know why we're not going to do that? You know why? Microsoft and IBM, that's why. Yeah, they just killed it. Absolutely, their lobbying killed it. All right, and why? Well, the only obvious explanation is that Microsoft and IBM and probably a bunch of other giants like them. I mean, these guys are the ones that are being singled out in this particular instance, but there's probably lots of businesses cheering. Is these big business guys probably own a crap ton of low-level junk patents that they use that they can just whip out to enforce whatever it is that they need to, then scare people away and keep stuff to themselves that maybe they don't really have a right to. All right. And so, oh, well, yeah. See, you know what? Yeah, we want to get rid of the patent trolls, but certainly don't want to do it, at any cost to our crooked business practices. So again, great that there's so much work going on to try and put an end to this patent troll nonsense. But, I think honestly, it's going to get done and the whole patent troll thing is going to largely disappear. I'm going to guess that a lot of it is going to dry up because of this, or it's going to be a lot easier to defend against. But at the exact same time, all we're going to do is strengthen the rights of big business and keep out little guys and keep out competition. Do I sound paranoid? Because that's what's going on. That's my nerd rage this time. And I have gone on way too far with that. You know what? We're going to get to something a little bit lighter.
Fingertips.
That's right. A few more fingertips. All right, not a whole show like last time. I just do a couple of them here. What I got? Two? Three? All right. The first one is a quick nerd culture report.
Bowling for weirdos.
Yeah, here's my problem. Is I love Calvin Hobbes. That's not a problem to love Calvin Hobbes, but my problem does stem from that ultimately. I've always loved Calvin Hobbes. I was reading it from the very beginning. I own all the books, owned all the books. My kids have kind of read them heavily, and so some of them have gotten a little worn and destroyed. But Calvin Hobbes is awesome. And recently, and when I say recently, it was probably a couple of years ago, but I just saw them come up again, the Malvin and Cobbs merchandise. Have you seen it? All right, it's based on Serenity, Firefly, and it's Malvin and Cobbs, and so it's Calvin Hobbes, but dressed up like Captain Mal and Jane, and it's just cool. It's just so cool. And you can get t-shirts and hats and whatever else. And it's awesome stuff. And I would love to own a Malvin and Cobbs t-shirt. My problem is that Bill Watterson never licensed Calvin and Hobbes merchandise. Ever. He was very adamant about that. So there were no Calvin Hobbs bed sheets, no Calvin Hobbs lunchboxes, no Calvin Hobbs apparel, no anything. And so every time you see Calvin Hobbs, or even more specifically just Calvin, every time you see his image anywhere, that's somebody who's just stealing. All right. So every time you see somebody's pickup truck drive by and there's that decal of Calvin in the back pissing on whatever that truck driver happens to hate. Yeah, that's all just stolen money. That's all copyright infringement. And so I've always respected him for that. I think it's stupid. All right. Personally, I really think, you know, I think he should have sold out. I think he should have made the extra money. But okay, that look, that's his artistic vision. It's his creation. It's what he wants to do. And so therefore, he doesn't want Calvin Hobbs merchandise out there. And so therefore, I really shouldn't buy a Malvin and Cobbs t-shirt. I mean, I want one so bad. I really want one. For 2 years, I've wanted one. Do I own one? No. Why? Because I'm not going to buy one. Even if it is a legitimate parody, and I don't really think it is. I don't think mashups actually really count as any kind of legitimate parody or necessarily a legitimate fair use, especially not when you're selling it on a t-shirt to make money. But, I want one so bad I can't have it. That's what kills me.
And now for something completely different.
Oh, thank you. I need to get off of that. Something completely different. The word moist. Do you have a problem with the word moist? It's not a word I use a lot, but I was just thinking about this because the new season of Tosh.0 was starting up, and so if you watch Comedy Central at all, then you could not have missed the ads for the new Tosh.0 season, where it was always a bearded Tosh standing in front of the camera doing something that is conceivably supposed to be manly or ultra-manly, and he's bearded and usually bare-chested and whatever. And so he does something manly in the commercial, and then it ends on the tagline, "Are you moist yet?" All right. This isn't about Tosh. It's just about the word moist. Did you know that my oldest sons and all of their friends think the word moist is disgusting? It creeps them out. To me, moist just means damp. You know, moist is just, slightly wet, damp, whatever. Moist is not a, and I asked him, I'm like, what is wrong with moist? Is there some kind of sexual overtone for you? Is there some kind of, and they're like, no, moist is just, it's dirty. It's gross. It's just a gross thing. And I'm like, why? And none of them could pin it down for me. But I don't know if it's all young people. I don't know if this is a regional thing. I don't know what shared collective experience they have gone through that has led them to this conclusion. But apparently the word moist creeps them out. And, you know, like I say, it's not my favorite word. I don't use it a lot, but it also doesn't really bother me. So I don't get it. So if anyone has a line on that, I mean, if this really is a real phenomena and anyone has a line on why moist would be considered creepy, especially if you're younger, I would love to hear it. Because I am baffled on this one. Although, you know what I haven't tried? Google. Ugh, you know, that's actually a reasonable place to start a bit of research like this. I will try and look that up. But anyway, I'm just baffling. Fascinating and baffling. And then, you know what? I'm going to do one more fingertip. This is another Nerd Culture Report. And the line, all I've written down here is, that's what I call my butthole. All right. I'm listening to the Comedy Film Nerds podcast, which is really funny. And the very first one I listened to, their guest on was Laura House. And I don't know if you know Laura House, really funny comedian. And me and my wife and my brother and his wife actually got to see Laura House live in Austin a few years back. And she was hysterical then, and she's still funny now. She's a comedy writer, stand-up. And they were talking about award shows on Comedy Film Nerds with her, and someone said something about the Golden Globes, and Laura, without missing a beat, responds with, that's what I call my boobs. All right, that's an old joke. People have heard that before. But then later on, something in the podcast, and I can't even remember what movie title it was, and they started making jokes about that's what I call, and Laura pipes in with, oh, well, that's what I call my butthole. And everything grinds to a halt as they're laughing, and it was just so out of place. And they make a bunch of jokes about it. And then what it builds into is her explaining that, no, really, honestly, you can say that about any movie title. It doesn't matter what movie it is. You followed up with, that's what I call my butthole. And it fits. So they were specifically looking at award show nominees, and she says, American Hustle, that's what I call my butthole. And so they throw in some others. Gravity? Yeah, that's what I call my butthole. 12 Years a Slave? Yeah, that's what I call my butthole. And this joke would not go away. They made, you know, they did like 12 of them in a row, and then they kind of moved on. And then like another 20 minutes into the show, someone throws out another one. And it had me laugh. So this is why I'm still listening to Comedy Film Nerds, is because, it's actually a really interesting show, especially their spoiler episodes. Really interesting podcast. But man, the very first one, I know it's juvenile, I know it's stupid, but it had me rolling. And you've heard me do this sort of bit before, because, oh, I don't know, 15 episodes back, I was sharing the similar concept that you can follow any movie title with the words "with diarrhea" and it becomes really funny. And you can go back and listen to that bit if you're interested in it. But this one did the exact same thing. I just thought it was hysterical. So I share it with you. Which now leads us to the end of the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast, and therefore, it's time for the badass quote of the week. Right, just a badass quote, not even a badass movie quote, because I have a quote that comes from, supposedly, a story about an actual event, and it is so good I had to share it. This was on another podcast. God, I've been listening to so many podcasts lately. And someone is telling a story about the first time that Sam Kinison did heroin. Now, do you know Sam Kinison? I half the time when I'm on this mic, I feel like I'm talking to myself or possibly to my brother. And so I just assume that everyone knows all the same cultural references I do. But I suppose if you're under 30, you may not know Sam Kinison. Sam Kinison was a very famous comedian in the 80s. He was a rock star comedian, huge. And he was, you know, a former preacher who went into stand-up comedy and became one of the filthiest, angriest, meanest comics on stage, and people loved him for it. I loved his act in the day. Nowadays, it's a little homophobic, it's a little misogynistic, it's a little, more than a little. It's not comedy that holds up as well over time, but in the day, brilliant. And he ultimately died in a car wreck. He was hit by a drunk driver. It wasn't even, you just would assume that with Sam Kinison, you would have assumed it would have been a drug overdose, that he would have burned himself out. But no, he gets hit by somebody else who's been drinking. Go figure. And that was like in 89, 90, something like that. So anyway, I'm listening to a guy who's telling about the first time that Sam Kinison did heroin. And the guy toured with Kinison, and he claims that he heard this story from Kinison himself and also from the other guy involved, a Canadian comedian named Mike McDonald. And apparently Mike McDonald introduces Sam Kinison to heroin for the first time. All right. He got the shot all loaded up. They get Sam's arm prepped. All right. And so Mike McDonald, Canadian comedian, injects Sam with the heroin. And just as Sam is leaning back and closing his eyes and getting ready to take this hit, McDonald leans into his ear and goes, "Satan says one more soul and mine will be free," and then walks away. And apparently, which to me, that's the badass movie quote as far as I'm concerned, that the "Satan says one more soul then mine will be free," or "Satan says one more soul and then he'll let mine go," something along those lines. That to me is classic. What a horrible situation. You have to be shooting up a friend of yours with drugs when you say it, but then to have the opportunity to throw that line in there, that's hysterical. And ultimately, the story then goes that it scared Sam so badly, it freaked him out so bad, he had a horrible trip. He was paranoid and scared, and he never did heroin again after that. Still burned out his head on cocaine. He had no problem with all the other drugs, but stayed away from heroin because of that experience. And a lot of it is, I mean, you gotta know Kinison, you know, on stage, he made a big deal about, you know, being a former evangelist preacher, and now he's up there making jokes about, you know, re-crucifying Jesus and all this stuff. And he would say right to his audience, "Oh, I am going to hell for that joke, and you guys are all going with me." And he says it as a joke, and he got lots of laughs for that. But people who know him say, yeah, no, that was actually still pretty serious for him, that he never gave up the Jesus stuff. He still believed right up until the end. He just believed all along that he was a lost cause. That's all. I mean, he was living this hedonistic, out-of-control lifestyle, all the while believing firmly that he was going to go to hell for all of it, and he just couldn't stop himself. So he took it all very seriously, and so that particular quote apparently freaked him the hell out. So that was my quote, and I thought it was a pretty good one. I next week I'll go back to movie quotes again, because really we don't want to break too much with tradition here, but that one was too good not to share. Which leads me straight to the my voice won't do it today. O-matic. Heck yeah. Wait. Which one should I do? Holy blueberries! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that's where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or, way better yet, send it to me in a private message on my forums. I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And, I'm looking over here at a 10. 10 is from Sirius Paul. He asks, "What's your opinion of Magic the Gathering? I play a green deck." I didn't even know a green deck was a thing. I've never played Magic the Gathering. I have no problem with Magic the Gathering. I know lots of people who've played. I've been invited to play many times, and yet I have this mental thing about Magic the Gathering that I can't bring myself to play a collectible card game. I just can't do it. There's something about collectible card games, collectible figure games, the collectible games, the idea that I'm going to buy blind packs and hope for good materials out of them, stuff like that, just drive me nuts. And you know what? And I say all that not even knowing if that's how Magic the Gathering operates. I assume it does. But I don't even know because I've never looked. Never even gotten close to it. Number 57. Hey, it's my brother Brasky. Brasky says, "Why did we think Cloak and Dagger were so cool when we were kids? Was it because Cloak was misunderstood and had a chivalry-like obligation to protect the awesomely hot dagger?" Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what it is. I mean, Cloak was dark and emo and clearly misunderstood, and yet, while being an outcast, he was also unbelievably noble. And he got to hang out with Dagger, who was just hot. So there you go. You hit it right on the nose, man. Number 91. Roll down. Hey, Stan. He asks, all right, this is going to be a tough one. What is your favorite geeky news or trivia site right now? Right now. Oh, man. All right. For geeky news / trivia, I'm going to go with Wired.com being my favorite. I mean, I've got let me just pull up my browser right here. See, I've got this whole string of links on the end here. I do all my shortcuts are straight from my bookmark bar. And so, like, the last dozen icons on my bookmark bar are just various nerd blogs, nerd websites, nerd this and that. I mean, right there at the beginning, there's the Baby Name Wizard blog. I've got that one up there now. And I check that a couple times a week. But Wired.com is probably the best one. I mean, seriously, the site is well laid out, covers a wide variety of topics. It tackles topics and angles on topics that I'm not being completely inundated with from other sites. So it feels fresh. It feels original. You know what I mean? Even if it's not necessarily. I like Wired. But let's see, going down the rest of them, geek.com is on here, but that one's, it's mostly tech-related, and it's not a bad site, but it feels like a bunch of paid ads. It honestly, I mean, even, for example, yesterday on geek.com, they had one of their lead news stories, and it's up at the top of the page, so it even looks like an ad, but it wasn't. It was ostensibly a news story by one of their, I don't know, journalists is what you might call them. I have no idea. But it's talking about Amazon hiking its price from $79 to $99. And whoever's writing the article is basically saying, hey, they're hiking up their price by 20 bucks, but you know what? It is so worth it. I can't believe anyone would ever pass this up. And then begins to list off all the awesome things you get for your Amazon Prime subscription. And it very well could have just been a paid ad. And you know what? For all I know, maybe it really was. But paid ad, not paid ad, editorial piece, news piece, it doesn't make any difference. It was just listed there like a news article. It was just, and so that is kind of off-putting. I feel like, you know, geek.com just feels like a lot of shilling for big companies that, oh, hey, let me know about Samsung's new phone. Oh, look, Toshiba's got a new laptop. Oh, look, there's some real news articles or newsy, news-like articles, I guess, news-ish. But most of it just feels like ad. I should take that link out of there. I don't even, what's the next one? I got Slate. Slate is sometimes entertaining, but I gotta be in the right mood. They're really pretentious. Really. Everybody's gotta use, $80 words where a $2 word would do. They have to sound overblown and self-important, and it's off-putting to me. Cracked? You can't even call Cracked a news site. You guys know my addiction to Cracked, and yet I know it's garbage. It's sensationalistic, headlines and link pictures just styled for the maximum number of clicks. They're no better than Huffington Post when it comes down to that shit, even though they will talk smack about Huffington Post all day long. They're no better. Well, I guess they are better because I actually go to Cracked still and I don't go to Huffington Post, but you get my point. All right. Ain't It Cool News. I like this site. I want to like this site. But it's honestly, the layout. I hate the layout of it and it just makes me tired. I mean, I like it. It's just movie news for nerds. You know, it's not, movie and media generally. But honestly, it's just painful to go there. I wish, if you're going to be a nerd site, you really need to have a better layout than that, as far as I'm concerned. Okay. And I got a few others. There's a site called Today I Found Out, Mental Floss, based on the Mental Floss magazine. I go to those every now and then, something interesting. Boing Boing. I like Boing Boing because I like Cory Doctorow. I like, as a blogger, I like that he pulls out stuff that I always find interesting. He has the same sort of interest that I do, like, a random article about word origins or a random article about some new technology application that I've never thought of. And whenever he presents it, he also presents you an article he found somewhere else, but also gives you his own commentary on it. And it's usually pretty in depth. And so I enjoy that about him. It's still just a blog site where we're just, collating news we find interesting and passing along, which is what I do with this podcast, really. But he's not just passing on a link and going, oh, wow, look how cool this is. He's passing on a link going, wow, look how cool this is. And here's why. And then he explains it. I like that. And other bloggers are part of Boing Boing as well, but, I specifically like Doctorow. But the last one, and this is one that I've raved about on this podcast before, IO9. Damn you, IO9. I can't go there anymore. I still have the link up because I can't quite bring myself to get rid of it. But here's what happened to me. A lot of times I help my wife at school, and while we're at school, I'll have my laptop there and I'm just playing while she does her work. And then every now and then, we'll work on something together. She might need my help, but mostly I'm just there to keep her company and, help the kids with homework or whatever. And so while I'm on my computer at school, I have to go through the school's web service, their filter. And so, for example, while I'm there, they won't let me go to Nerd Pride Radio because I'm blocked, but they will let me go to IO9. And then when I get to IO9, all of the images and videos on IO9 are served through a different web server, and the images are blocked. So go to IO9. If you're someone who visits them every once in a while, go to IO9 and turn off all your pictures and images so that you can't see anything on the site. All you can do is read their articles. It turns out there is absolutely nothing of substance on that website. The 90% of their articles, 90% of them, I would guess. I mean, there's a few of them. There's the postman thing that they do, and that's kind of cool. And There's the spoilers articles, but I don't like reading spoilers, so I don't go to their spoiler article. Morning spoilers, is that what they call it? Anyway, but most of their other articles are, hey, wow, look at this cool thing. And then they give you a two-sentence blurb, and then they provide you a series of images about whatever the cool thing is, and that's all the substance there is. And so I found out that if I couldn't see the images, if I couldn't watch the videos, which are not theirs, they're just linking crap from somewhere else, they're not providing any substantive commentary. They're not providing anything to go along with it. They're just going, hey, look, this thing looks cool. And without the visuals, there's nothing there. So I actually, as much as I was enamored of IO9 at one point, I completely, after 2-3 weeks of going up to the school and finding out that you know, it's really boring without the pictures, I realized that, yeah, there's just not much to it. All right, gone on way too long on that one. Let's move on. Oh, number 21. This is again from my brother Brasky. Says, so, what are you listening to lately on Sirius Satellite Radio? Oh, well, that's easy. Nothing. Turned off my subscription about a year ago, maybe more than that. Yancey still has his, and so every once in a while, if I'm driving the work van, he's got it wired up in there, And so if I'm in the van, usually I'll just turn it over to stand-up comedy. But usually I plug in my Kindle and I listen to podcasts anyway. But if for some reason I'm in the van and I don't have my Kindle, I just listen to stand-up on it. I just give myself 15 minutes of comedy until I get where I'm going. Then I'm done. No more satellite radio for me. Number 4 from Zimnipot. Zim says, when dog food is new and improved tasting, who tests it? All right. My guess is nobody. You know what? You would like to think that they have their old food formula and several new food formulas, and then they do side-by-side comparisons and see which ones the animals are attracted to first, and whichever one gets the majority of positive first responses, that'll be the flavor that they go with. And you would hope that they're doing that kind of research. But my guess is, in most cases, when you're changing the flavor of pet food, really, they don't really – I'm guessing nobody. Nobody tastes it, and nobody cares. That all we know is, hey, we changed our formula, therefore it tastes different, therefore we can say improved flavor. Is there any government restrictions on what the minimum requirements for improved flavor are? Probably not. Therefore, go ahead and say whatever you want, right? Number 57. It's Zimny again. Zimny says, if you were a tree, what tree would you be? Well, I would be a tree? You want to say oak. You want to say a big old mighty oak, because it just implies strength and wisdom and power. But you know what? I think I'm going to go maple. I feel like I'd be kind of Canadian about it. You know what I mean? You know, I also want to say willow, just because it's an interesting tree. I've just always thought willow trees were fascinating, but I'm just not much of a willow guy. That's really that whole weeping willow image, that sort of downcast, depression, that sort of sweep in the ground sort of thing. That's not really me. Now, I'll go maple, something big and tall and traditional and vaguely Canadian. That works for me. Number 49, Brasky. Brasky says, kids in the hall or the state? And then further question, if you can't include $240 worth of pudding, does that make a difference? Oh, yeah. But I know what you're asking yourself. You said, Barry, Levon, where did you get $240 worth of pudding? Shh, don't you worry your pretty little head. All that matters is we got the pudding. Oh, yeah. Okay, that was completely pointless and gratuitous. I know. That was the characters of Barry and Levon from the state. And I would actually say I think the state. I've gone back and watched a little bit of both. And because the Kids in the Hall, by the way, are all on Netflix right now. So you can go back and watch all the seasons of Kids in the Hall from Canada way back 20-something years ago. And the comedy doesn't age well. It doesn't hold up as well as it used to. And I mean, there's some of it that's still good, but most of the ones that I like, I already know by heart, and it's not even a, I love the old Yeller sketch. I had to go find the old Yeller sketch just to show it to my kids, because that one's hysterical. But a lot of Kids in the Hall is absurdity for its own sake. And I feel like, the state is still just a little bit more modern in its sensibility, and the state is still 20 years ago. I mean, you got to remember, this is still old comedy. But the state, I generally find funnier. That's just all there is to it. And you know what? As much as I love Barry and Levon, Doug just kills me. I will still quote Doug to my kids because I'm Doug, and I'm out of here. I love Doug. Doug's great. And I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but when his dad starts talking about Bob Dylan, hysterical. Best sketch they ever did. So, you know what? You want to see it? You go look up the state and you look up the Doug sketch and you see what I'm talking about. Because definitely the state. Double aught! We win the internet. Double aught. Number 100 is from Sirius Paul. And he says, what is your favorite Spanish word? Oh, we covered this last week. It's la grapidora, the stapler. What was the last thing you said to someone? I'm sorry. That's number 71 from Zimny. I should have announced that part first. What was the last thing you said to someone? The last thing I said to someone right before this moment, before this question, was La Grapidora, the stapler. But I'm assuming you don't mean what was the last thing I said to you on the podcast. The last person I spoke to was just before I started recording. My wife called to ask if the van was done and how much it was going to cost. And it turns out the van is done, and it's going to cost us a couple $100. I had to replace the ignition switch. And anyway, and so she asked about that, and I told her that it was there. And I said they were going to drop the van off for her because, oh, I love having a local mechanic that you know well, because he gets done with it and he just drives it over to the school and he leaves it there for her. And he'll, you know, they're very, very nice about that. They work really well with us. And because we're giving them a lot of money, so of course they work well with us. And so the very last thing I said to her was, well, probably I love you is how I ended the conversation. Or no, I probably ended it with you're awesome. But right before that I said, well, I said, it depends. If you're still not feeling well, because she's got a bit of a cold, I said, if you're still not feeling well and you want to come home right away, don't worry. I'll go pick up our son whenever he's done with play practice. I said, or if you want to stay late, you go ahead and do that, and you know, I'll come up and get the kids, or we'll get some supper, or whatever. And she said, I would prefer that you just come on up and hang out with me until we're all ready to leave. And I said, oh, all right, that sounds like fun. I'll bring something for me and the kids to do while you work, and we'll have a good time. I'll see you then. There, that was it. That was the conversation I had. So, number 50. This is Sirius Paul again. So far, Sirius Paul, Zimny, Brasky. Has anyone else gotten in this time? I got one from Stan, I think. I think he was the one that asked me about trivia websites. Everyone else, you guys need to send in some more. We are running low, people. Dangerously low. Number 50 from Sirius Paul. Which shoe do you put on first? Whichever one I grab first, but generally the left. I mean, it really, the order doesn't matter to me, but if I have both of them on the ground in front of me, I will slip my left one into a shoe first and then reach down and pull it up over my heel, and then I'll do the right. Going the other way would just be unnatural. But, you know, if they happen to be laying funny or if I grab them out of order, who knows, it could happen. But usually left. Number 85. This is Brasky again. Brasky says, would you take this deal? $5,000 cash, but you have to walk around breathing your cousin Rob's farts for 1 week. You can arrange the delivery device however you want as long as you're breathing noxious fart-flavored air for an entire week. Or, oh, I guess there is no other or. It's just, would I be willing to take $5,000 cash in exchange for breathing Rob's farts? Yeah, sure, whatever. Not like I haven't smelled his farts before. Jesus, we grew up together. I think I could suffer through that for a week for $5,000. I'm cheap. I don't care. Boom, last one. This is number 51. We've done 51, haven't we? Nope, we have not. It is Sirius Paul, and Sirius Paul says, Sherlock Holmes versus Doc Savage. Who wins, and why? Sherlock Holmes wins, because I know very little about Doc Savage, and I just finished watching both seasons available of Sherlock Holmes with Benedict Cumberbatch, and he was awesome. He was absolutely awesome. You can't kill him. You can't beat him. Sherlock Holmes is spectacular. He's smarter than all of you, and you know it. Oh, all right. Enough of that. It's time for a recap.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2014 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week is, Weezer's in the Garage, and She Blinded Me with Science, as performed by William Shatner. Oh, wait. And I did a turntable, so we got two turntables and a microphone by Beck. All of these songs are available on iTunes. Check them out. Buy them. Enjoy them. I wouldn't include them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you feel like doing something nice for this podcast, you head on over to iTunes and write a nice review. Or check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. You stop at our Facebook page, my Facebook page. You click like. It is just 9 seconds out of your day. You can do that for me. Don't forget to check out the free games I have available on our free games page. Instant Game, Animal Ball Melee, Sandbox Hill, and 2/3 of a dozen others. All free. All the time. If you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com, and I promise you I will actually respond to you. But to be totally honest, the very best way to talk to me is to come and sign up for our forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up, you send me a message, we will hang out, we will have fun. I, Mike Jones, do solemnly pledge my life to the bodacious and heroic protection of the innocent, the defenseless, the adorable, and the pathetic all across the universe. I shall refuse no cry for help. I shall accept no monetary reward for my heroing, and no force shall slow my emergency response times, except for possible untimely meteorites, subspace anomalies, or time loops. I am a hero, noble and righteous. Every breath is a promise for justice. Every step, a tiny dance for freedom. Every word, a melodic pop song about the glory of love. When evil gets all fancy, we break that biz down for hope. We are the bravest warriors. Power, respect. High five, R2.